Blog Talk Radio.
This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio Network. Does somebody have their phone on speaker? We're getting feedback. Okay. I want to remind everyone that these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. Please take the speaker off. Okay. And that's July 28th, 29th. And 30th, I got that wrong, 29th, 30th, and 31st. See, you rattled me there, and now I'm all messed up. But anyway, we'll be there this year. We'll have another panel on guardianship. And Lawrence, are you going to be there this year?
I'm going to do the best I can, yes.
All right. So,
looking forward to seeing you there, too.
Yes, I know. It's stunning in all my glory, aren't I? What we're doing tonight, everyone, is an update and a recap of things we've discussed on the USDA Hour over the last several months. We've had a lot of requests for updates of where things are at the moment, how things are going, if any action has been taken at all. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to my co-host, Lawrence Lucas. And Lawrence, I'm going to let you bring this up and we'll take it wherever you want to go. And joining us also is Lisa Donnelly, who has just been a tremendous force in fighting for the women of forestry. So I'm going to let you two take it, and I'm just going to kind of drop here to the back. If I have a question, I'll ask it.
Thank you, Marty.
We're going to try to cover tonight some of the events, including TV and radio coverage, regarding the USDA coalition on minority employees and their effort to do what we could and can do to help to change the culture at the U.S. Department of Agriculture for farmers as well as for employees. We are expecting Ron Cotton, our president, to join us, and we do have Lisa Donnelly, our vice president for many, many years, who've been in the struggle for the farmers and especially the employees. And I can't say enough about what she's done with the women in the Forest Service and the abuse that they have tolerated and put up with for many, many years. I think that going back and thinking where we started the first of the year with covering with Tom Burrell and the black farmer situation. And the one thing that we were able to conclude out of that in covering that show and having him participate, black farmers in the southern region, they were saying to the Supreme Court that the Department of Agriculture continues to deny the right to settle, resolve the claims and cases that they have been logjammed at USDA Office of Civil Rights. And we're saying that the Office of Civil Rights, the processing and administration, not only for farmers but also for employees, has been bastardized and corrupted to a point that although we have articles coming out, people talking about how great the last administration and this administration is doing, the truth being, when you listen to the women, if you follow the hearings, and Lisa is going to cover a lot of that, if you listen to some of the shows, the PBS and the Dateline shows talking about, and the women talking about what has been going on at USDA, it contradicts, it totally contradicts what USDA Forest Service officials are saying. It contradicts what the USDA Office of the Secretary under Sonny Perdue, as well as the Office of Civil Rights, have been saying how great things are in civil rights. So what we would like to do is maybe allow at this time to for Lisa to kind of summarize, and we're going to have a discussion. We'll be on for about an hour, and we're just going to have a discussion about where we are, where we've been, and where we're going. Lisa, you want to chime in now?
Thanks, Lawrence, and thanks, Marty, for having us on. We so appreciate you giving a voice to the Forest Service and USDA employees. It's just so nice to be able to be on and have you as a kindred spirit, you know, listening and getting our issues out there. Thank you so much. So,
you're more than welcome.
Yeah. So, you know, there's been a lot happening this in the last year. We have had a lot of attention to the issues, especially the women's. I mean, you know, there's more, of course, than just the women's issues, but I'm going to speak mostly to that in the Forest Service right now, because that's what we've been really, you know, working on so hard. And, you know, we've been struggling for so many years to try and get, you know, some kind of change, any change, really, to the way the Forest Service and the USDA address issues of, you know, claims of harassment and bullying, discrimination, retaliation, and it's all been for naught, because they just haven't been responding to us for quite a few years. And, you know, yes, we have conversations with them, and we have little meetings, but then nothing ever comes out of it. And so really it's been since the Me Too and Time's Up movement that we have actually been getting the attention from the agency. Now, nothing really positive has happened, but when the Me Too movement started coming out, the media started looking more than just Hollywood and other entities where women are being abused with knowledge of, you know, coworkers and managers and the enablers and whatever. They started looking at the federal government. We had been contacting them for a while and getting, you know, quite good media attention. If you remember in 2016, the Huffington Post did that article, Out Here No One Can Hear You Scream. That was a really good article for Huffington Post.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, yeah. Denise Rice's beautiful face on the front. I mean, it was really a nice article. And, you know, but it didn't touch the Forest Service or USDA in any way, other than, you know, I'm sure it irritated them and it embarrassed them. But there was there was no response. Nobody, you know, we still continued to contact them. Lawrence, Ron, myself, we'd like to have meetings. We'd like to sit down and talk about the issues, you know, crickets. And so it was.
Jeez.
So it wasn't until the Me Too movement came out and we started getting attention to these egregious issues of, you know, sexual harassment, assault, rape, cover up, the enablers that know about it and do nothing. They finally, when they got our letters and our contacts, the media, they went, hey, you know, this is an important issue. And so that's when we were contacted by Dateline NBC. We were contacted by PBS, contacted by, you know, multiple news, Washington Post, New York Times, those kind of things. Not only that, but we were able to get the attention again of Congress. And, you know, when Lawrence and I testified before Congress on these issues of discrimination and harassment, in 2008, we testified both on Black Farmers issues, Native American, Hispanic women farmers issues and on the Forest Service, USDA and Forest Service issues. At that time, my focus was on workplace violence against women, which it, you know, usually is. I represent all different types of, you know, protected statuses, but my focus and expertise is generally on, you know, violence against women and sexual discrimination. So we testified to that in 2008 before the oversight, House Oversight and Reform Committee. And, you know, they were gassed, and Congressman Cummings and I can't remember who the other congressman was at the time. You know, they made some very strong statements, and then nothing happened after that. And we were kind of left on our own. So then in 2017, when, you know, or 2016, I'm sorry, in December 2016, when Denise Rice, and, you know, that was, if you remember, that's around the, you know, Me Too movement was starting to gear up around that time, 2016, 2017, and then, you know, 2018. But Denise Rice and I testified before the committee, same committee, and it was Congressman Cummings again, and this time Congressman Chaffetz was the chair at that point. Republicans were a majority. And again, you know, they were aghast and made some really strong statements about how, you know, women are treated and what the hell is the USDA and Forest Service doing, you know, allowing this to happen to the women, and the men are getting away with it. And then nothing. We really didn't have any follow-up. The women were getting retaliated against. So, you know, that's discouraging when that happens. I mean, it's good to know that Congress is, you know, by your side, on your side, and yelling at the, basically yelling at the agency and saying, get your act together. But then when, you know, the stuff continues, the agency is just like, okay, so we went through that next, you know, kind of attitude. And so things just kept getting worse for women and other employees too. But the sexual harassment increased, the reprisal for reporting it,
It got phenomenally worse, Lisa.
Oh, much worse. After the 2016 hearing, Denise Rice herself was retaliated against. And if you'll remember, Congressman Chaffetz and Congressman Cummings were just adamant. And he gave us his, you know, cell phone number, Congressman Chaffetz said. And he, you know, pointed his finger at Lenny's law ago and said, there better not be any reprisal against these women because here's my personal number to you, and if you get retaliated against, you call me. Well, I wrote him a letter. We didn't hear from him, you know. So when, because Denise was retaliated against, she was the most qualified woman for the position she applied for, and they didn't even consider her. Hired some guy that wasn't even practically qualified for it. And so, I mean, such blatant retaliation. And but they, you know, they resolved it because they realized how blatant it was. It was one of the few cases they resolved in 2017. But so yeah, the retaliation, Marty, just increased, I would say, tenfold, and not feel like I was exaggerating, against the women after 2016. And so then, you know, we're going to 2017, because that was December 1st, 2016. Well, going through 2017, and that's really when, you know, the Me Too movement started gearing up. And that's when we started, again, you know, contacting the agency and saying we'd like to meet with you here. And if people will understand this, I contact USDA and Forest Service weekly. Not every once in a while, not monthly. I will send very few weeks go by that I'm not sending an email to their Secretary Perdue or Chief Christensen or someone, you know, of that caliber saying, need to let you know this employee here, you know, this woman is being stalked she's gone to her for a supervisor. The poor supervisor has told her, I don't see it, you know, develop thicker skin, you know, we don't think that's really happening. He's just friendly. I mean, whatever ridiculous answer that, you know, a manager gives to a woman when she says, I'm being stalked. And sending that to the agency, you know, to Purdue, to, you know, Lago and Sensky and Huron, and all the staff. Usually I just hit all the staff. No response. So that is what has been happening all along. So, which is one of the reasons Congress didn't believe Lenise Lago or Chief Christensen when they tried to come out with, well, we, you know, everything we know of, we address, and, you know, we take immediate action and hold people accountable. Because I give all that stuff to Congress that I send to them, you know.
Right.
Every email I have, a copy of it, not everyone, but, you know, I've given them a lot of the emails where, you know, and then talked with them and said, oh, yeah, this one that I sent on Denise Rice where she's, you know, here's the affidavit from the male firefighter that saw the people say we're not hiring it. You know, all of that stuff then goes to the Congress, and then I have a discussion with them, and they're like, yeah, looks like reprisal meet. So they see all that stuff so that when we get before, you know, the committee and the agency starts saying all this baloney, Congress knows. They know they're lying because they've already seen the documentation. They've already talked to the woman and have been convinced by the evidence. You know, we can't convince, you know, the judge or the agency because they don't want to be convinced. But Congress looks at it and goes, yeah, that looks like reprisal. It's pretty blatant. So, you know, we're giving all that stuff to the agency that I am sending to them. So they know all these things are going on. We don't get any responses from them at all. You know, not even a thanks for contacting us, Lisa. We don't agree with it. You know, have a nice day. Nothing. It's just crickets, you know. And that's their way of pretending like we're not here. And that, the, you know, they don't have to deal with us. And, you know, we're invisible. Thinking that that works for them. I mean, they thought that worked for them until 2018. Because in 2018, that was probably, the beginning of 2018, was probably the most embarrassing time for the Forest Service that they've ever had. Because what happened was, and this is one of the big things that happened, that we were able to make happen to get where we are now, is we were able to get the attention of Dateline and PBS. And we've got Michael Volpe, who is an independent writer, writes for the Daily Caller quite often. So we were able to get the information to Mr. Volpe and to PBS, and the Dateline, but, you know, the Dateline kind of, you know, I won't even talk about that, but about Tony Cook, the chief of the Forest Service. Okay, so here we have hashtag Me Too, hashtag Time's Up, egregious sexual harassment by very powerful men. You know, Weinstein and all these guys. All that's in the media, and we're able to get the information to PBS and to Mr. Volpe that one of those powerful men is the chief of the entire Forest Service, Tony Cook. Now, for people that don't know the Forest Service, you know, we're talking millions and millions of public land, very political. The chief of the Forest Service manages all of it, and it's a very powerful position, politically, financially, you name it. It's a very powerful position. So Chief Tony Cook is a serial sexual harasser. The agency has known about it for years and years and years, and they promoted him up through the ranks to the position of chief of the Forest Service. So we were able to get that information to, and this proved our point, Marty, that we've been making for years, is that these men, when they're not held accountable, when they're GS7 and they're GS9, and they just keep promoting them. They promote the culture of sexual harassment and retaliation and discrimination of others, and they perpetuate the attitude that it's okay to do it because, look, you can get promoted to be the chief of the Forest Service, even if you sexually assault someone. So, and that's what, and the other thing that we, you know, it proved for us was to say that there's people in positions making these decisions that are not wanting to work with us and are not making the proper decisions because they're perpetrators themselves. They're sexual harassers or they're retaliators. Like Lanice Lago sitting there before Congress talking about, oh, I've been sexually harassed myself. She's one of the biggest retaliators there is against our women. Okay?
Yeah.
And so, so we, you know, so the big thing about exposing Tony Cook was that it showed that what we've been saying about the agency all along was true. It really highlighted our other exposures of district rangers and directors and, you know, forest supervisors and regional foresters, where we've been saying this is going on and people want to go, they're not going to do that at that level. Professionals, you know, it helped, you know, validate what we were saying was correct.
Right.
So that was a really big accomplishment for our movement, for the coalition and for the women and the women's working group. It was a big accomplishment. I mean, nobody likes to say, oh, you know, we got somebody forced out. It's not that. It's just that it validated the culture and it validated what we've been saying. It was a tremendous embarrassment to the agency. And they have been retaliating against us ever since. They're angry. We can't get any settlements. The only settlement I've had this year from USDA, but it's not Forest Service. So, and one man. That's it. And this is the first quarter of the summer. So it's retaliation. They're mad. They're retaliating against us. Really mad at Lawrence. Really mad at me. Extremely mad at Shannon because, to go further on with what has been happening. So we had PBS, you know, Michael Wolfe and PBS exposing Tony Cook. A lot of women on those shows coming forward and talking about sex discrimination, sexual harassment. We had three of our female firefighter class agents on PBS, Darlene Hall, John L. Wagner, Darla Bush, the three lead class agents, they were on. So there was a lot of information about both sex discrimination and sexual misconduct on PBS and then somewhat on Dateline. Dateline didn't turn out to be, you know, what we wanted it to be. But then, you know, one of the head people at NBC was a sexual, you know, harasser himself. And we finally figured out why that occurred, why Dateline was shut down, because the head CEO was also a sexual harasser and forced out. So, but anyway, both shows went very well. We got a lot of press after that, you know, Washington Post, New York Times, Huffington Post. So there was a lot of media around that. And so Congress also then got back involved with us against oversight and reform. You know, they're just great. And so we started working with them again, and that resulted in the hearing, November 15th, 2018 hearing. So that takes us to pretty much the end of 2018 of all the things that we did in 2018 that were just, you know, remarkable. The women stepping up were just so brave and just so helpful. I mean, really got the issues out there in PBS and Dateline and the hearing and with the other media. And it's scary because these women have been retaliated against for doing it, but they stepped up anyway. So, go ahead, Marty.
Well, I was going to say there was an email that came in here, and this is from Ginny in Maryland, and she was asking about Shannon. She said she had listened to the show on Shannon about her getting fired by email, and I was wondering where this young lady was. Is she okay, and was she ever rehired?
That's a good question to lead into that, because Shannon was the one that testified at the November 15th congressional hearing. And physically, she's well. You know, she's doing well that way, and she's keeping, you know, her mood up. She's about to lose her house. Because, no, they have not reinstated her. If you'll remember, on November 16th, the day after the hearing, Congresswoman Mulroney, who was in the hearing, sent a letter to the agency saying, you know, she listed some information that they want on what the agency's been doing to address these issues. I doubt they've given it to her even at this point. And she also stated that they should be reinstating Shannon because Shannon's message was very powerful and very truthful and credible, and she needed to be reinstated. And no, they just completely ignored that. She's got like 3 EEO cases, I think, active right now. And we just went into the hearing process. Got a judge finally, a hearing process. They're not even interested in talking settlement at all. You know, so they're gonna take the hard line on Shannon. They're going to push her financially to the point where she loses her house. That's retaliation. You know, they want to hurt her, and then they're gonna take it all the way to court with this because her case. We'll go through hearing, but we're going to file in federal court. We're going to get an attorney and file in federal court. And there will be a lot more media coming out on Shannon, especially when she loses her home. And because the agency has retaliated against this woman, that she is going to lose her home.
Yeah. Something to add to that, Lisa, one of the things that we have experience with USDA, which ties into what has happened to Shannon Reed. What always seems to happen is when these whistleblowers come forward, you have management at every level retaliating, harassing these employees. In fact, you had this problem. To show you how systemic the problem is at USDA, it really goes all the way to the top of USDA and to the Office of Civil Rights. You have the Office of General Counsel, who's running civil rights for all practical purposes, take their money that has been designated for program in civil rights and use it to hire attorneys to fight employees attempting to resolve their complaints. They also, with the leadership and the guidance of OGC, they even hire K Street-type attorneys to go into these settlements, some of those with Lisa and some where she's not there, work trying to keep these employees from resolving their complaints. And these complaints, in many cases, are not processed administratively. We have a obvious situation where if the cases are not highlighted, many of the cases that are filed, and at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, many of those cases for farmers and employees are not processed administratively, fairly, and timely. We have found cases where cases are in boxes. We found employees told that when they follow up on their cases, and Lisa and I have been involved in that many, many times, where the case when an employee say they've been to the counselor and they were waiting for a counselor to return the call, absolutely nothing happens. And even in the Office of Civil Rights itself, it retaliates and reprises against its employees. You have whistleblowers in the Office of Civil Rights who are trying to do the right thing. Instead of management saying, well, look, we got some good, talented people here. Let's go ahead and utilize this talent and utilize it in a way that it can help us. They're the people that know the problems. Instead of retaliating against them for speaking out and talking about the problems that exist in the Office of Civil Rights itself, what they do is they reprise against them. We've had many cases where we've had cases of sexual abuse and discrimination and reprisal and even firing, the same as what they've done to other employees in the Forest Service. The Office of Civil Rights themselves used the same tool, using Office of General Counsel, the Office of Human Resources, and managers who are guilty of reprisal, guilty of denying promotion, guilty of harassment, guilty of denying individuals proper accommodations. And so the problem at USDA is systemic in nature. Although we focus so much on the Forest Service, and thank God we have such brave women in the Forest Service who are willing to stand up and speak out, we do not have that throughout the department. But we do know that people are filing cases, and the cases are not properly processed, timely, and doing the administrative process, as well as if it reaches the final, the investigative stage, many of the cases are not investigated. We, for example, in the case of farmers, what they do with farmer cases, many times their cases are not processed for over 2 years and allowed to go into statute of limitation. This is how corrupt and how functional the Office of Civil Rights is. So I cannot overemphasize the importance that when we have people speaking up and speaking out at USDA, the system is not going to fix itself. But the oversight responsibility of the Congress, the Secretary of Agriculture, he and the Congress and others have a responsibility to bring that cesspool of civil rights to an end at USDA, and we don't find anyone who is really aggressively dealing with this problem, although you have many oversight committees of Congress that are responsible to fix it.
Okay, we've got an email here from Noah in Virginia, and he says, I'm perplexed by the idea that within a federal agency, we are required to have a Office of Inspector General, a Civil Rights Office, and all these other offices in an attempt to make these administrations function properly. Does anybody besides me see a problem here?
Go ahead, Lisa.
Go ahead, Lauren.
Well, to make a long story short, it's these committees, the Office of Inspector General, and sometimes in the case of GAO studies, we have found that, for example, the farmers, they've been saying there were no problem with civil rights at USDA. When the Clinton administration came into being, they found out that the Office of Civil Rights was disbanded under the Reagan administration, and it was abolished, and cases both of farmers and employees, especially farmers, were not being processed. That shows you that if, in fact, the organizations that's supposed to be representing farmers and the Congress in its oversight responsibility, both in the judiciary and the oversight, as well as in agriculture, you would think that by now this problem would be fixed. That is not the case. That is because we have a disconnect and a lack of responsibility and accountability of those organizations that have oversight. And yes, I agree with the gentleman. You would think that with all these organizations in place, that women should not be having to go be assaulted, be raped, be intimidated, be harassed, be fired for speaking out. But you do have that in many agencies, but especially in the U.S. Department of Agriculture, too. So to answer his question, it's a shame that it's going on, and we're doing the best we can with brave women and others who are willing to come forward. And we've also had men to come forward and validate many of the charges that women have brought to the attention of the Congress and to the news media, PBS and Dateline and others.
Okay, we have another. This is Mike Deese from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. He says, in the past, I listened to a show where you talked extensively about the fact that taxpayers are having to foot the bill on all of these charges, all of these lawsuits, and all of these activities. Did I understand that correctly? And if so, why isn't the person charged with these crimes forced to pay for their own attorney?
Well, you know, that's always what we ask, too. And that, you know, kind of gets around to what Lawrence was saying on the last call, is that, yeah, we have a civil rights office, and having a civil rights office is a good idea. It's, you know, to promote civil rights and to address issues. But what's happened is the offices of civil rights, whether it be at USDA or Forest Service or even in a region, they've become, excuse me, corrupted and bastardized. And now all they are is defense of agency, you know, offices. The civil rights offices are set up now, funded by the taxpayer, where they see their job as protecting the agency against the evil, you know, person that has filed a complaint. And so they have all the processes at their disposal, working with employee relations, you know, human resources, what I call the, you know, human resources industrial complex, and with the Office of General Counsel, the three of them working together, civil rights, OGC, and HR, working together, taxpayer money, to defend the perpetrators and discredit the whistleblower, the complainant that, I'm a woman, I come forward, this man has sexually harassed me, he's stalking me at my home, he told me he was going to bend me over and spank me, he pushed me up against the wall by the neck, held me up against the wall. I'm telling you things about Shannon Reed's life in the Forest Service, by the way.
Right. Right.
So the woman comes forward and says this to civil rights and says it to HR, and they do everything they can to disprove what this woman's saying. And then all of a sudden, she's also being discredited. So disprove and discredit. That's what they do. Disprove, discredit. They spend all their resources to disprove what the woman's saying. And then they use their other resources in their little basket to discredit the person. All of a sudden, she has bad performance. Now, she may have spent the last 15 years getting fully successful, superior, and outstanding performance evaluations. But after she stood up and reported the sexual misconduct, all of a sudden she can't do her job and she's on a performance improvement plan. Or all of a sudden she gets charged with misconduct for AWOL because she came in 5 minutes late from lunch. I'm not exaggerating. This is the stuff they put in these charges. Or with Deneen Cohn, for example, she got a charge of misconduct because they claimed that she falsified a claim of sexual harassment because they used all the tools at their disposal to disprove her. And now to discredit her, they're charging her with misconduct for making the complaint of sexual harassment and telling her, because we couldn't prove it, you falsified it, lack of candor charge, you're fired. Okay, so that's where your tax money is going, to defend the perpetrator, discredit the whistleblower. disprove what the whistleblowers say.
Yeah, Elisa, I'd like to add to that. If you contact the Office of General Counsel or the leadership at USDA, they will tell you that there has been no discrimination at the USDA against women farmers, Native American farmers, Hispanic farmers, African American black farmers. They will tell you that there's been no discrimination. At the same time, the American taxpayer, and the American taxpayer should be appalled at this. The fact that in the Office of Civil Rights and the Office of General Counsel at USDA, with the complicity of the Justice Department, have allowed for years for all these minority farmers, as just one example now, this is a program, to be discriminated against. And we paid billions of dollars, taxpayers' money, in the billions of dollars to pay off many farmers in settling these cases. And you cannot find on record that I know of, there are very few people that were held accountable for discriminating against all these farmers. And this discrimination comes from in the field, at the FSA office, at the RD office. It comes from the fact that when it gets these cases get to Washington, they're not processed. Some cases, in the farmer cases, they had some of the files found on windowsills, found in shopping carts. And I would say even now, I believe the same thing is happening now that happened with the black farmers and the other minority farmers that filed cases and won, with farmers today and employees today. I'm saying to you that the Office of Civil Rights and the Civil Rights Processing and Administration is worse now than it's ever been. Instead of it slowly improving after the hard work that Dan Glickman and President Clinton did to clean up the mess, civil rights mess at USDA, it has been totally demoralized by every administration since Clinton and the Glickman administration.
And corrupted. And what you're saying is so true, Lawrence, when you say that if you call them up, they'll say there's no discrimination against the farmers. There is no discrimination against the employees. And you heard it in the hearings, the last two hearings we had in 2016 and in 2018. You hear the chief of the Forest Service, the deputy chief, the IG, you know, whoever's up there saying, these are all the wonderful things we're doing. We're doing this and we're doing that and we're meeting dates. And we're, you know, we've improved our times for investigations and, you know, closing out cases and, you know, all the things they've. Not once do you hear them say that there's, you know, any discrimination or retaliation. And until you admit there's something, you can't really fix it. And instead, we get the corruption and the incompetence and the intentional activity to try to meet certain goals that they have to show that their statistics are, you know, complaints are going down or we're meeting dates, you know, we're meeting that 180 date time frame by set up to process a complaint by EEOC. And it's not true. I had a recent situation just a couple weeks ago where the USDA Office of Civil Rights sent out information to the complainant and myself. It was a mixed case of discrimination and removal from service, fired. And there's, you know, you have all these steps you have to go through, all these legal steps that, you know, it's hard enough for an employee's representative to go through and an attorney to go through all these federal steps, which is requirements, which is why a lot of attorneys don't take federal cases. But for the employee to try and figure out themselves, it's like reading, you know, another language. So I get this information from USDA that's completely incorrect, telling me that I have to go to EEOC and I can't go anywhere else to file it. And I, you know, I don't want to go into the, you know, steps. It's too tedious. But it was incorrect. We had to go to MSPB, the Merit System Protection Board, not Equal Employment Opportunity Commission with this case. And they had all this information and the form, sending this employee to the wrong agency to file her appeal. And there is no way she would have ever known that was incorrect. You have to know the law. You have to know the regulations. You have to know EEOC. You have to know MSPB. You have to know the U.S. Code. You know, all of that stuff to actually know what to do. And so I looked at that and I said, well, they got this jurisdiction wrong. Now, if, and then I had to contact U.S., I had to, first I had to file an appeal with EEOC on it to make sure that the appeal got in that they told us to go to that was wrong. And then I had to, what I did was I contacted USDA and said, do you realize what you did here? I shouldn't even have to be appealing this because you sent this woman to the wrong department, federal department. And if this didn't get corrected, she would have lost her case. And so they look at it. Now, this is what you're going to watch. They look at it and they go, well, you know, it looks like that's true. It looks like there was a mistake. Around that time, we were having problems with our computer system, and we think that might have been the problem. Okay, fine. I didn't believe it, but okay, fine, just fix it. So they fixed it. But then I got an email from another person at USDA Civil Rights telling me that they found the documents that they actually lost, which led to them giving us this bad information. And so basically telling me that the USDA person that I first talked to, a high-level person, lied. I want to point that out, that these things, you know, it can't just be incompetence. It has to be intentional. These are the things they're doing. This person would have lost her case, no longer had a case, a complaint, and she was fired. And she would have been just SOL if I hadn't realized they gave her the wrong jurisdiction, because by the time somebody might have realized it, she'd be past her 30-day requirement to file with the other department. And there's no fix for that. And so all of a sudden, if this would have happened, Marty, she would have gone in as a statistic for USDA to show another case closed. And it would have looked good for
them. Have you ever talked to... Okay, have you ever talked to this Mr. Glickman again?
No. Are you speaking of Dan Glickman, who was the Secretary of Agriculture during the Clinton administration? We have not talked to him.
Wondered if you'd had any further communication with him. I realize he's not there any longer, but I just wondered, you know, if you'd had any context with him. To me, this is just these excuses, Lisa, that you're talking about, you know, and of course, Lawrence, these are reflective of what you hear on the minority farmers is the time has passed. You've lapsed. You missed the deadline. We had it, but we don't know what we did with it. Well, we never got it. Oh, wait a minute. We found it, but it's too late for you to do anything. Why do we tolerate this in a federal agency? I just don't understand. Why is this tolerated? This has to cost an extraordinary amount of money beyond what it would have cost to take care of it initially. So
That's true.
The purpose in dragging this out and coming up with all these lame excuses rather than responding to and acting immediately upon complaints of any kind? Wouldn't that be the most efficient, expeditious way of dealing with it?
Yes, that would, Marty. It would be the most efficient. But you got to realize you have people in these offices. And let me tell you what they do. Because an administration comes in the office and they want to show that they have a handle on this problem that has gone on so long, Secretary Vilsack and now Secretary Perdue, all of these secretaries come in and claim that the problem is fixed. But it can't be fixed if the numbers are not right. So what you have in doing these administrations, you have what you call a fudging of the numbers. Another description is that at USDA now and doing other administrations since Clinton, they have been fudging the numbers and cooking the books. And they do that because they want to look good and say that we have fixed the problem. There are other people within the Office of Civil Rights who what they do is they hold – if the numbers are not high, they will say that what they'll do is not process them. They'll throw them in the trash. They'll put them in a box someplace, or they won't respond when a person calls for counseling. And somewhere along the system, what they do is they don't report these numbers, or they keep the file from even surfacing, and they're not actually counted. If that be the case, then when the OIG and the GAO and the Congress ask you how you doing, they come up with these bogus numbers. These bogus numbers, which are untrue, which are falsehood, and it's really corrupt what they're doing. Because many times some of these employees that are supposed to process complaints, they get awards at the end of the year, taxpayers' money again. They get awards in the thousands of dollars and in the hundreds of thousands of dollars showing that they have a good working civil rights process and they are resolving the complaints or they don't have any complaints because their system is better than it was before. That is the way these politicians who take over in these administrations, that's what they do, but they do it at the expense of the American taxpayer, and they do it at the expense of damaging the lives of farmers and customers as well as their own employees. These are true facts, and we have evidence of that. But you would think that the Office of Civil Rights would come to the table and want to meet with us and know about these problems. You would think that the Secretary Perdue would want to come to the table and talk to people that know about the problem and willing to help them with the problem. That does not happen at USDA since it happened during the Clinton-Glickman years, but it hasn't happened again since.
That is just this to me is just mind-blowing, and it makes me wonder, with as many attempts you've made to contact them, the times you have been able to contact them, all of the hearings, all of the follow-up emails, letters, everything, and yet not only is the problem not taken care of, it's gotten worse. And we're paying these people. For you out there listening, do you understand we are paying these people to not do their job? Now, I want to know where you're working at that they will let you come to work and not do your job and still give you a nice big fat paycheck.
Not only a paycheck, but also bonuses. Also bonuses at the end of the year.
Yep, and all the other perks that go along with this. Yeah. This is just absolute. Oh, for God's sake.
Not just a $500. Here's your $500 bonus. Here's your $1,000 bonus. About
the
$20,000 bonuses for these people.
But Lisa, at the end of the year, those bonuses that I'm referring to are not in the hundreds of dollars. Those bonuses are in the thousands of dollars.
Yes.
This is just disgusting.
What I want to say is that, we've been contacted by the Forest Service. The Women's Working Group has been trying to get, since the hearing and, Vicki Christensen's rollout of her plan that, isn't working at all. And we've been trying to get, the Women's Working Group to meet with the chief and to meet with the chief staff to discuss these issues. So we have been contacted by the chief staff to meet with the women. Unfortunately, they're putting caveats on it, such as Lisa Donnelly doesn't get to show up. Lisa Donnelly can't participate.
Oh.
Yeah, that's one of them. And women like Shannon Reed can't participate, and because she's been fired. And so there's some serious differences in what would happen and what would need to happen for the women's working group to meet with the chief and to meet with her staff. And that would be, you're not going to be excluding people, and you know, you're not going to determine who is and isn't in the meeting. So we're still trying to work that out right now. And the women are pretty adamant that I be a part of it. And we're all pretty adamant that women like Shannon be a part of it. And
yes, of course.
I'm hoping that, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what they do.
Yeah. We've got about 3.5 minutes left here. Both of you, do you have a final comment you'd like to make before we close down?
I think that I think my final comment would be for, I'd really like people to understand what it takes to fight this agency and to expose the corruption that these women and men are going through. And for all these women and men that have stood up and suffered not just loss of their careers, but loss of their entire job and paycheck, and their mortgage can't be paid, and they're about to lose their home, and divorces that happen from the stress. I mean, there's just so many things that happen to these employees that stand up because they're doing the right thing. The agency destroys their lives. And I think what I'd like to leave everyone with is to an understanding of how brave these people actually are. Because who among us raise your hand, supervisor this, and lose your job, and you know you're going to lose your job, would you do it? How many people would say, yeah, I'll do it? And that's what these people are doing, these men and women in the Forest Service, because retaliation is so bad. So I would just like people to remember that.
Well, and something I would like to add in here, too, there is a common held belief that people who blow the whistle like this get settlements in the kabillions of dollars.
No.
It is a rare occasion that any whistleblower gets anything. Very rare. The rest of them walk away so far in debt they can't see straight. Their careers are ruined. Yep. Their lives are ruined. Their families are torn apart. This is another one of those things that is promoted as an excuse for why they're whistleblowing. They wanted to make money. They don't make money.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rare occasion anyone does.
It's rare. Yeah.
We're down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're down to the last minute and a half. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I want to remind you again of the Whistleblower Summit taking place July 29th, 30th, and 31st, I get it right yet, in Washington, D.C. We're all going to be out there, and I hope you can join us. It's open to the public, and there is so much going on there. You'll be worn out by the time it's over. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Whistleblowers. And with that, thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Lawrence. And good night.
Thank you, Marty. Good night.